All right, welcome to the Dead Ramones podcast. I'm Ryan Sim. As always, you know what the deal is. You clicked on it on Spotify. My guest today is Dave Woodhead. How you going, man?
Man, good, brother.
How you going? As if we just haven't just spent the last half hour together.
Yeah, man. Look, just so we can encapsulate this moment in time.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah.
You picked me up from my house after work. And then we drove and you got me, you got some brewskis.
We got some Balta Cervezas.
Yeah, man.
Pretty good.
They're pretty, look, I'm not going to say anything about them.
We shouldn't say the brand names without,
I think, well, you're fine. You're fine. Oh, actually, I don't know. Well, maybe not. You know, maybe you could get a.
Yeah, that's what I mean. Yeah. No brand names without payment, guys.
That's it. But they're, and you know what? Let's not even talk about their fucking taste either.
Yeah, find out for yourself, or don't.
Or don't. Yeah. Like, we give a fuck.
I can't confirm nor deny. it's great to have you on, man. Obviously, you're a stand-up comedian. Mm. People know you from Triple J. You're a writer.
Mm.
Voice on Big Mouth.
That's it.
That's pretty cool.
That was cool.
That's pretty fucking cool.
You know what? I was... And you know, keep this in.
Yeah. We don't have to.
No.
If it's like legal stuff or
whatever. No, it's just, it's not legal or anything, but just more of like my own.
You're bragging, your ego?
Not even, my own ego. I had, this is one of the worst stories to start it off the podcast with, because like, I saw Steph Tisdale get some, I think she's on the third season of Total Control on the ABC.
Yep, we love Steph.
Which is great. And I was like, man, third season, I was like, it's great to see someone get like a, kind of like working role. And,
I
heard
she's
on movie.
She's like a character.
She's
now
on movie on Netflix and stuff. Yeah. And I was just thinking, man, like, I was like, that's fucking, it's great to see that. But then back in my head, I was also like, man, you know, fuck, like, man, I got to get a movie on Netflix. How do you do it? And I'm like, man, I'm on Big Mouth already. Like,
yeah,
and I was like, damn, I forgot.
damn, my life a movie. Yeah,
I'm like, damn, I really need to be more grateful about things. I really
just need to like what stop an in all, the moment.
I just, as soon as I thought that, I was just like, dude, how about you shut the fuck up?
That's so funny. I forgot about how I was on one of the biggest shows ever.
Yeah, well, you know what? Because you know why? Because I even kind of forgot I did until it was leading into drop.
Oh, sure.
One, I just thought I was going to get cut out of it.
Sure.
So like my brain, as soon as I did, was just like, don't worry.
Too good
about
to be true.
Yeah, just don't worry about it. Yeah. Like, but like when I recorded, I was in Brizzy at the time.
Yeah.
And the floods had just happened. So there I am. I'm like, all right, I'm going to go to this fucking I'm gonna go to the studio.
Yeah, a little sound booth.
And you know, I'm gonna get fucking handed by, you know, beautiful women gonna meet me at the doors and go, Mr. Webb, you Big Mouth? And I'm like, yeah. And she goes, oh my God, I love Triple J. I'm like, thanks, ma'am. And she goes, I'm like, what are you doing after? I'm like, don't worry about it. And like, this is what I thought was gonna happen. And then I go record and Nick Kroll's gonna go like, brother, I'd fucking handpicked you out of everyone.
Move to LA.
Yeah, move to brother, LA, come brother. Stay in my place.
Recurring character.
And I'm like, I don't really want to stay in a house. He goes, brother, I'll buy you a fucking house. Get your ass over here. But instead, just because it was the floods, it was the recording studio they do Bluey in, I think.
Yeah, sure.
It's all been fucked. All the waters. Right. Like I walked into like, it looked like it felt like I was the prime minister assessing the damage. I'm
shit.
Geez, you really got a
knock
deep. But and then like they took me into one room that was like just barely saved, and they had a mic hanging in like an iPad mini, and then
the level of perseverance is like we had a complete natural disaster in this town, but hey. It's Big Mouth. We gotta get this Big Mouth.
We need to get done. Yeah. Because you know that because I know that they would have got the call and been like, fuck.
Yeah,
you
we
know,
need this check.
And a lot of so but you know, everyone at that recording studio was sick and
cool.
Yeah, it was cool, man.
Good
so
good experience all
over. Well, good experience. And like I didn't meet Nick Kroll or anything, but I met like the man, it was like it felt classic Hollywood, this guy. He was like like this and like from the Zoom, like nice guy.
Yeah.
But he's like big glasses and like big puffy haircut.
Yeah, fuck yeah.
He's just like, all right, Dave, you know, look, we've seen your stuff. We love it. And then like, there was this older Hollywood.
You're going to be a star, baby.
Yeah. No, like, and there was this older Hollywood like woman in the back and she goes, we love it. Like she's like, we love it. And I'm just like, oh, they saw raw comedy. that's the clip. That's
the only thing they watched. They saw.
Yeah. Oh, they saw fucking,
I didn't even know what to call the bit.
Yeah, I forget. It was like.
What's the character's name? The kid's name in that bit?
No, that's me. That's me. You're punching getting, the kid.
No, no, but the kid with the abs. What's his name?
Oh, man. I don't even think I gave him a name.
Yeah, right. Yeah. I think of it as like the Timothy bit or something like that. Like,
yeah, yeah. Fuck.
I know. Basically, if you're listening and you haven't watched Dave's National Raw comedy set on YouTube, which, I mean, what are you doing?
Come on. All right, hey, and when you click onto it, I just want to say this. Welcome to comedy.
Welcome to
welcome.
Comedy's happening. Okay. Dave, he was your closer, right, at the time?
No, you know what? No, like actually, no, it was two jokes. No, what I closed on for the Raw set was I had two jokes about harming children back then.
Yes.
I had one that was punching.
And you yourself were a child.
I was a child.
You were 18,
yeah,
right?
Yeah. So I would. I had one joke about one where I actually did where I, well, no, did I punch him? I don't know. But like in the joke, I punched him. I'm pretty sure I did in real life. Punched his, like my mate's. Kid brother. My mate's
abs,
brother.
He had abs.
Yeah, because he had abs and wanted to take a punch. So I punched him like, but I didn't knock, in the joke I said knock him out.
Yeah.
I didn't knock him out.
No.
I knocked, well, that joke
but the
came.
Funny bit of it is you really winding up, like you really savoring.
Yeah.
You had to punch a child.
Yeah, and then like, well, I think I knock him out and then I like, we cover it with bottles to like,
oh no.
To like recover a bottle so that he wake up the next day, his parents would catch him. No, but the other one, the one I closed on was I think babysitting my cousin and it's been annoying and like he had a battery in his mouth. So I take the battery out, then he starts crying, so I gave him the battery back.
Oh man. What other bits you got?
Man.
Let's just do stand up.
Yeah, fuck it. I'll tell you what, no, yeah, and you know what? Actually just on this, like because you gave me a bit of a
don't tell me I gave you advice.
Not advice, but
your career's going so much better than mine.
No, you
how embarrassing.
You struck something you brought a joke back into this year's show that I'm doing.
Oh, really?
Yeah, that I, the, and you'll see it tonight as well for the first time in ages.
Oh, thanks, buddy.
Go-kart joke.
Oh, yeah, I love go-kart.
Yeah.
No, I did see you do that recently. I can't remember if it was at Rat Club or
But I brought that back because,
I think it's so funny.
Yeah, I brought it back because, and I haven't thought about that joke in ages, but I had this one joke about dating and I was like, I kind of just felt weird just to have like one quick joke and not have another one. And then you were like, bro, where's your go-kart bit at? And I was like, fuck, man, I haven't thought about go-kart in a while.
So you got a little chunk.
Chunk now.
No, yeah, I'm like that with stand-up stuff as well because it's like, oh, that's a good joke, but like, what's the point of me telling the joke? Like, why are you in the audience going to give a shit that I suddenly am talking about like going to a Renaissance fair? There has to be something else.
Well, you know what? You know what the vibe is that I've been, that I kind of caught on to my first show? Like, so I guess the debut last year. But just because I'd been doing stand-up for so long, it wasn't about writing an hour. It was just about getting the, what's the hour? Like what
is the hour?
And like, so it was like kind of, and it was like kind of a privileged position because it's like I had all this material. So it was like, oh, I can just kind of construct it. Now I've just put the piece together, but I was still trying to do it as a story. But then I caught on like, just, I think, cause I've been working in music now for a while. And also I went and saw like, we saw My Chemical Romance and how that they had to put a whole discography of 10 years into a satisfying set list.
Yeah, exactly.
How
okay,
do
yeah.
you do that?
Yeah, sure.
I was like, and that's kind of how I put my first show together. And I remember there was a big chunk that just felt like it was missing. I remember Grace saw the show.
Grace Jarvis.
And she was like, you need, man, I was hoping.
Another Brizzy alum.
Yeah. She was like, I was hoping you'd do that. The meth bit.
Oh yeah, the arrivederci.
And I haven't done that in years, so then I put that in and then that was like the source. So I felt like it's the same for you.
I love that, man, because like, yeah, you have these jokes like when you start and like they don't not work.
No, you just can't find them.
You just
don't know where they fit. They feel like
they
weird.
Fit 3 years later.
Yeah, exactly.
That's it. Yeah.
That's so it.
Yeah, it's kind of nice to go back and look at these premises. I really like that premise, but I never like had a proper punchline or whatever. And then you kind of have the skills or you know yourself better, whatever it
yeah,
is.
Yeah.
Like you're like, oh, I want that back.
Yeah, straight up.
Which is cool. Mm. Yeah. Yeah, that's cool. Oh, so you got a show for festival season before we get into the,
yeah, man,
the record.
Yeah, absolutely. Look, just quick plug, Black and White.
Black and White.
We're doing the black show.
We're doing the Indigenous First Nations show.
First Nations show. I'm Torres Strait Islander for people who might not know. And look, spoiler alert for the show, the Blacks win.
Nice. Okay. So it's a fiction.
Fuck.
Damn.
Fuck.
I'm trying so hard not to be racist.
Damn it.
I can't help it.
Hey, brother, you're a product of your environment, man. Look, it's a.
That's cool. So you're doing Melbourne, you're doing Adelaide?
Adelaide, Melbourne, and Sydney.
Brizzy?
No Brizzy at the moment. Yeah. Nothing locked in.
I know for a fact I have listeners in Melbourne and Adelaide. So if you're listening to this episode and you don't go see Dave Woodhead, man, Black and White,
Adelaide's
hell to pay.
Adelaide's happening soon as well. Like 2 weeks. I don't even know if this will be out, but
I could tell you. Actually, no, I couldn't. I'm not going to fuck around.
Yeah, don't fuck around with it. Look, it's 17.
This will be out in 2 weeks.
It's the week of the 25th. Which is the same.
I reckon this will should be out 22nd.
Whatever. Look, if you miss it, you miss it. But Melbourne, come around.
Yeah, fuck yeah.
But yeah, man, it's and honestly, you thought that first show, which you didn't see, was good. The second show is
You've done a heap of fucking hours, dude.
Well, really, only two official. But I've done. All right,
because you did the Drake shows. You did two Drake shows.
I had, so the first one, Thank Me Later, and then Take Care Never was going to be the debut.
Was that COVID?
COVID, yeah.
But so Thank Me Later was like the trial, and then Take Care.
But it was good because Take Care was, that would have been the most embarrassing show. I just didn't know how to do it.
First show.
Yeah, but it would have been like, could have been a career.
You're like squirming. You're thinking about the material.
Well, you know what? No. Oh, I mean,
Jesus. You're such a big dude. You shrunk. You just shrunk about it.
Man, because I did it in Brisbane, and I think, I was, there was just jokes about a girl and a,
oh,
you
shit.
Know what
yeah,
I'm saying?
Yes.
And it was a bit like, totally. It was a bit trying to be a Drake show, and it actually kind of came, and it was not hitting. I felt like not bad, but I just didn't have the finesse to pull off. Like, it was supposed to be like a joke about romance or whatever.
Yeah, sure.
But it just didn't have the finesse. It would have been
off like butthurt or like incel-y or
something.
No,
it just just came off a bit like, because I was like 22, so it's a bit like, who gives a fuck?
You
know,
that.
And you know what? Maybe a bit.
Sure. Yeah.
I just think doing it, I realized when I was doing it, I was like, I don't really have anything. It just, you know, where it's just, it's not like,
I kind of love that level of like self reflection. I think that makes good comedy. Like that level of like, who fuck yeah? Like, I'm 22. Yes.
Yeah.
Obviously.
Yeah.
Like, what? Because like what I mean by that is like what that leads to in terms of writing and thinking is like, oh, well, so what's next?
That's it.
What comes after that? Like the why, like behind everything?
Yeah. No, that's it.
I think that makes for better material.
Yeah, and I think like that's kind of like, I mean, just on that was going into the show, knowing it was going to be called Black and White. I was like, all right, I know in my heart that me doing the whole part of an hour where I go, guys, racism.
Yeah, sure.
It's bad. And not that, you know, I mean, I'm sure there's people out there who do. It just never feels right doing it for me. So it's like, it was nice to just kind of know. I felt like a lot more comfortable with like how I was going to do things.
But you've got so many bits about being Indigenous in like in just not being Indigenous, but being Indigenous in the culture that you're in as well. Cause like all your friends are left. Like socially at least.
Yeah.
You have good friends and like good people surrounding you, but then it's like, yeah, I don't know. I'm talking about a show I haven't even fucking seen yet.
Yeah.
But like it sounds cool.
No, but yeah.
I guess you've got these bits. Sorry. I remember you have that bit about Australia Day.
Yeah.
You know, and like the reality of it, and like they have guns and I have to go pick up my fucking spear and then like,
Well, that's what I kind of realized about like with what shows and what stand-up shows especially are supposed to be and really what comedy is. And for me personally, it's just like, because I also know when I have a lot of opinions and thoughts about race and stuff, but then when someone goes like, well, okay, what do we do about it? Then I go, I mean, I just thought about it.
It'll make you laugh, I
you
guess.
Know, I don't, yeah. Like, and you know, so
that's
it's
my
just,
job.
Yeah, it's just like, so like, this was just more like, it's just like kind of the collection of tales, and then yeah, from it, and even just like, kind of even having the open ended, like, all right, now you've heard an hour. And look, for a lot of people,
what do you think?
Yeah, for a lot of people, all cunts need to do is just listen to a black guy for an hour, and then they can be like, oh man.
Yeah.
I didn't think about shit like that.
Totally.
You know?
Yeah, totally. No, absolutely. That was me in my 20s, I think. Yeah, absolutely. And just on that, I do love the story about going to the protests.
Oh, thanks,
man.
And
then not spending any money on their fucking sound system. Yeah. Let's not burn it here, but fuck, that's a good bit.
Thank you, bro.
That's a good fucking bit. I think it's just that, like, a way to make fun of, you know.
Oh, we can burn it because it's also, I posted it. It's not on the show this year. Yeah, yeah.
But the reason I like it is because, like, you're able to make fun of the situation, but you aren't making fun of the fucking issues.
Well, yeah.
It's just like how ridiculous, like, we have to protest in the world that we live in.
Yeah, yeah.
And it's just like, oh man, it's two steps forward, one step backwards. Like, I don't know. It's just
Just like, it's just that, and it's also that feeling, I think, like, where most people go to protests, you know, and if you're, I mean, and that bit had a lot of, like, kind of different points as well where you know, might get expanded on, but but one of the big things when I'd go to protest, and you know, I'm there and I want to be in it, and I want to be listening and I want to hear it, but I am standing way at the back
under the sun
and it's hot and I'm fucking,
it sucks,
and there's so many people around me and I'm fucking like this, and then all I hear is just, you can't hear shit. So then you're also in it. So in the back of your mind, you're in the forefront. You're like, of course, yes, black power. Yeah, yeah. But in the back of your mind, you're also thinking, fuck these cunts. this auntie better shut the fuck up, because
I need a beer.
I'm actually about to pass it.
Yeah, yeah, sure. Yeah,
and,
yeah,
and then
yeah.
also like, and also,
which is just a very human.
Oh yeah, 100%.
That doesn't make you good or bad or anything.
It's like, I mean, you know, like, not selfishly, but like, no one, you know, and growing up around black fellas my whole life, and knowing how some mob are, and not, you know, I'm not calling anyone out.
No,
but,
no, I know. But I know Steph's had issues online and stuff.
But like,
people,
I also know how when there's some people when they get up and you know that they're going on a bit too long and they're not really making a point.
Oh,
I know. I'm like, this cunt is gammon, which is fine.
You're lighting.
Yeah, I'm like, yeah. All right, come on.
Time's up. 1 minute.
Come
one
on,
minute.
You gammon. Come on, you gammon cunt. Let's. You can't be fucking sitting here, you know. But yeah, that's what I'm like. All right, wrap it up. Like, man, it's man. But I guess I guess protests, you know, and injustice.
Speaking
in the world
of protests and injustice,
yeah, man.
Today's album,
yeah, man,
really addresses some of these issues. Mm. today we're so, as anyone who listens to the podcast knows, we're going year by year at this point, just one album per year. We're up to the year 1994. Were you alive yet?
No,
fuck this you, is
four,
cunt.
Yeah. 4 years before the great one came.
The great one. The prodigal son. 1994, we're talking about the band, New York hardcore band called Sick of It All. The album is Scratch the Surface. It's their third full-length album. Like I said, 1994. The band themselves formed in 1986. So they had two full lengths before this, and I think one EP before 1994 rolled around. Scratch the Surface was their first record on a major label.
Mm.
So this is like the whole thing in the 90s that comes up again and again. This kind of follows on from the last episode I did with Steph Broadbridge talking about Quicksand. But like post-Nirvana, major labels were just like, okay, what else?
Mm.
What else is going to work from the punk DIY scene,
you
know? So all these hardcore and punk bands were suddenly getting on MTV and getting into the mainstream. And Sick of It All definitely aren't the only ones, but I think they're the ones who kind of, in a lot of ways, like it's hard to talk in absolutes, but in a lot of ways, they made the most of the opportunity,
man,
to get into middle America, spread the message of hardcore, from the New York sort of streets.
This is a real not fucking around album.
I think they're a real not fucking around band in general. I said to you in message, I'm like, we could have picked, honestly, I could have picked any one of their albums, especially any one of their albums from the 90s, honestly. But for me, this one's got, on a personal level, I think this one has the songs that mean the most to me from this band.
Yeah.
But also, like, it's just a good turning point, like the major label thing and everything. It's like a good example of an underground scene, like, bursting wide open.
Yeah, and you can, I mean, just even like, you know, getting the info that it was their first major label, you can hear it in a production. Like,
yeah, it sounds great.
It sounds like
it's 30 years old.
It sounds fantastic. Yeah. How do you usually like to do it on?
I'll give you a bit of context, maybe for the band and for the record.
Yeah, because like, and also, and,
but then bring your opinions in. Yeah, I don't like to color your opinions too much, but I think it does help to have a bit of context. Yeah.
I guess from first of like, you know, just so people know, for me and this like where I was like when you told me like you want to come on the podcast and like I was like yeah, and then there was a little part of me that was like I was like, you know, like because I do the crosses on Triple J with Lachlan.
Me and Lockie came up in the same scene.
So and also Josh Merriwell.
Yeah,
goes by Josh Redbeard. And like, you know, Josh Redbeard, big punk guy. Yes. I was like, man, I might be.
Did you talk to Josh about
this? I'm gonna talk to him. I got him
because they're touring right now. It's insane.
Yeah, you know what? Have they gone to Sydney yet?
Oh man. It might have just gone or it's coming up. We're pre-recording this, obviously. By the time you hear it, will have been like two or three weeks ago.
Yeah, they're out of here by the time anyone... Yeah. Look, it doesn't matter. We'll figure it out later. But no, I haven't yet. But I was like, man, I hope... Like, I kind of hope I like this record because I hate to like get exposed as like a... I know punk, but then in my head, I'm like, yeah, like...
No, well, it's interesting... Yeah, we'll get to it because I said to you before we even recorded, it's like it's interesting having you work for the radio station, having even just done Hottest 100. You got a real good look at what people like now, what most people in Australia like. You kind of have good data on that now.
Yeah.
And then the point of this podcast is like, well, I grew up in this kind of weird underground. Well, for me, it was everything. It wasn't weird to me. It made total sense. But trying to communicate that to just like comedians is like there's a barrier there, and that's kind of what's fun about it.
And also I think like, you know, with most guys, you know, your age or like kind of older
important because I'm 38 and you're
20. Can you believe this? 25 turning 26 next year.
But
we've also known each other since I was like 19. But yeah, I think that's kind of like where young people like it's not crazy to jump between so many genres. But I guess like for like when you're in the 90s and shit, it's like you got your genre or you got your group or you got your
thing. Yeah, this was kind of the start of like the melting pot. Let's get into it. So I'll just give you background on the band. So like I said, 1986, I think they were sort of like just out of high school when they formed, and it was two brothers. It was Lou Collar, who was the singer. Mm. And Pete Collar, who was the guitarist, is the guitarist. They're still doing it. Their drummer, they had a couple of lineup changes, but basically since the early 90s, they've had the same lineup. So their drummer is Armand. He's fucking Iranian, I think. What's his last name? Armand Majidi.
Armand Majidi.
Or Armand. Armand Majidi. And then the bass player, Craig Sitari. They formed this band. They released these first few records on small labels. Then they had this major label blow up. And then after that, after they finished their contract, I think it was a subsidiary of like Atlantic or something. Then they had the rest of their career up until recently on Fat Records, which is Fat Mike from NoFX.
Oh yeah.
And Fat Records was just like they released. There are really so many important punk bands like Lagwagon.
Yeah. Oh, so they would have been on tour with NoFX here.
No, they're doing their own headline.
Oh, okay. Yeah, oh, okay. Yeah, cool.
Yeah, it's completely separate. But yeah, it's what you're saying about the genres kind of melding. Like metal bands, like love this band. Mm. You know, like they are so like. By definition, like almost by numbers, they're a hardcore band. Like the dudes, they're like from Queens, they're like from the streets. But like they had this, there's something about the sound or maybe even just the attitude that like Sepultura and Napalm Death took them out on tour.
Mm.
Sick of It All themselves took out Korn on one of their first national tours.
Yeah. Well, see, I mean, that's kind of like listening to this record because I'm not like when I talk about like kind of punk and hardcore music, I more leans towards the emo side. And
yeah, sure.
And like I've now even
Mike Cam.
And I've kind of from Mike Cam, I've been really getting into, as of late, like Thursday.
Yeah,
Thursday. And I guess you can kind of catch these, you know, kind of New York, New Jersey, like, you know, kind of they're around the corners from each other. Yeah,
definitely.
And with this record, and but what I don't really like, what I haven't never really gravitated towards, and not pissing your pocket, calling it rain, I've never gravitated towards the punk of like, oh yeah, don't it. And this guy's, and but when I put the record, when I started the album, I was like, the instrument, like the actual, you know, the, what's the, what do you call it? And usually I'm talking about rap, like the beats or like, but like the backing track or
the music.
Know, the music, yeah.
The songwriting. The song, I guess.
Yeah, yeah, I guess like, you know, like the actual instrumental of like,
the tone of
It just, it sounded quite, there was some emo stuff and there was a lot of things that you could kind of.
There's some melody on it. Like
there's
melody,
a lot of melody. That's
the melody
it,
on Consumed, which I think is, oh man, I don't know which track it is, but like it's early in the album. It's like, I think it's like first three or four tracks. Consumed, it gets, it has this chorus and it is like, it is almost something that you could hear on a Thursday song.
Yeah.
It's like, it's, and it just suddenly goes out of this like really rhythmic pounding kind of verse into this like big epic chorus, and I was like, oh, that's just so, yeah, I really do love this album.
I mean, that's, and that's like for me, like, and this is, and yeah, I've only gave it, like a full listen to last night, and I listened to some highlight tracks today, but like when I gave it his first listen, like my two standouts, are the intro and the outro, and that's how I know it's a good album, because if my brain kind of goes, oh shit, I like how that started,
and then
like at the end. I thought it switched to a different band because...
Yeah, that last track is different, hey?
It's, you know what it sounded like to me? It sounded like...
The ceasefire with the bass chords at the start,
dude, it
right?
almost sounds like... It almost felt like a bit of like a System of a Down-esque kind of like...
That's so
a bit aerials.
Yeah. That's so funny that you say that. Yeah, yeah. That's... That, I think... So there's in the 90s, it seemed like... I'm kind of trying to make sense of it like after the fact, but it seemed like a lot of stuff was kind of just happening at the same time.
Mm.
But maybe the roots of that existed in the New York hardcore scene. Like, cause you had hip hop happening in New York as well as hardcore. And so suddenly all these bands had this like real groove to them.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And then from there you go and you get nu metal.
That's exactly, you know? No, cause, like, and that's exactly right. And it's very fun that you bring up that they talk out Korn, cause you can also see, see, I'm always quick to compare some shit to emo, but you can really hear nu metal. Like, there was a couple of beats where it's like, man, you could just throw Fred Durst on
it. It's just the rhythm. Yeah. And I think like what the difference of it in terms of like maybe authenticity or whatever, not that I think that should change what someone enjoys, but like I think the where the influences come from is still kind of important to talk about. Like these guys... Like I said, they have KRS-One doing a voiceover on one of their songs.
Yeah.
So these guys were in CBGBs, in the hardcore clubs, but they were also in the streets of New York and like where KRS-One was, where New York hip hop was happening as well. So they got that like straight from the tap.
Yeah.
But then these other bands like the System of a Downs and the Korns got it. Like they put it in a bottle and then they're selling it to Middle America kind of thing. So you get further and further away from the original kind of influence of something.
Yeah.
And I think that's where people's like kind of bullshit senses go off with nu metal and stuff like that. They're like, oh, this is like pretty suburban. Like,
Yeah.
It's a Xerox of a Xerox after some point.
You know what? And just to, I watched his real in-depth video about like why Kid Rock is one of the most... egregious culture vultures in history, which we all knew he was.
Yeah,
but
yeah.
Seeing him how it's like how shameless he was, like where he's like, his dad's a racist who owns a car dealership or some fucking thing, would drive him or would get someone to drive Kid Rock to the hood of Detroit where he met up with these, you know, started like in a group of black rappers.
Yeah,
and
right.
They taught him everything to rap and they, you know, embraced him and they were in a little group and then a record label came and said, hey, we like the white kid from this group. We're going to take him. Yeah, and then Kid Rock went, I love that idea.
Yeah. And then just like the country. Like,
yeah. And then like,
again, the middle America kind of lowest common denominator.
And then now it's like, but even like kind of like, you know what? Even at that point, it's like, yeah, sure. Do your rock and stuff. And I guess it was kind of believable because he was still selling that Detroit story and like had the rappers and stuff. But then like now he's just like a full racist country singer. Like,
yeah, the Bud Light stuff is wild.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
Yeah. Taking shot, they like shooting Bud Light with his AR-15 because a trans woman advertised it. Like, who are you? Are you? You're just shooting the cans. You're just shooting the cans. You're not shooting.
Yeah.
In his mind, he's absolutely just shooting a trans woman. Well, like any trans woman.
Absolutely. I was like, Kid Rock is
so messed up.
He's such a fucking piece of shit. But yeah, and then you got guys like these who are like, even from that into their like album that came out like a year ago or whatever.
Yeah.
So one of their tracks is called That Crazy White Boy Shit. Yeah, and you're like, you can kind of, they absolutely get it. Yeah, they just get it.
Yeah. Can I get you another drink?
I would love another drink.
Let me do that. 30 minutes. Cool.
Make a mental note.
Yeah.
Yeah, so it's a really good point, like just how stuff does just get capitalized on, and that's like one of the downfalls of, I guess, like these guys reaching MTV status and reaching like the major label. But I will say, I just wanted to say, like what you're talking about, like what you heard, like especially coming to it like 30 years after the fact.
Yeah,
it's so funny because like in one of the interviews with the singer Luke Collar, he's talking about like people who have asked him to like guest on their songs or people who like want to watch the band and stuff. And obviously he talks about like Zach De La Rocha from Rage Against the Machine, but they came up in the same scene. Like Zach De La Rocha was in hardcore bands.
Yeah, yeah.
But then he's talking about POD, you know, the Christian new metal band.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely.
They got him to guest on a record and he was like, I didn't even know who they were. The singer from Disturbed. He came to see me and said he saw us play the Metro in Chicago every single time we played there.
Wow.
And then, yeah, System of a Down 2. And then this makes more sense to me, but I think it still warrants because what you're saying about Thursday MCR. He was like, Chris Carabar of Dashboard Confessional, they're like his favorite band.
Mm.
And he became friends with Luke Collar's wife and like gets like special edition records through through the guy's wife and stuff. It's like
honestly, if there was just like, I mean, you could just hear what kind of would separate turning, if you turn one of their punk records into an emo record, all you have to do is just after the first verse where you hit just hit it with a 3x4 drum.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, and then just, you know, fucking rip into it.
Yeah, yeah. No, I love it. I love it because, like, yeah, you can just see. I love that you listened to it for the first time and you could hear just like the depth of influence that it had.
Yeah, man, it is quite bonkers.
Yeah. So I think you can't really talk about this album without talking about the lead single from it, which was Step Down.
Yeah,
which is like the anthemic one. That was the one that got an empty. It got them a lot of attention because they played the music video on Beavis and Butthead. So they got into MTV rotation.
While this is happening, I'm going to put my phone on silent.
Yeah.
But I just want to kind of play the record.
I mean, I can describe it to you if you want. So basically the music video, it starts with Reefer Madness. It's set up like Reefer Madness, but it's like hardcore madness. And you've got this like old style, it's all black and white. You've got this old style, like old guy reporter, you know, like the hardcore scene, violent, antisocial, blah, blah, blah. And then he goes in, the song starts playing. It's like Sick of It All playing live, essentially. Yeah, yeah. But then like basically it just goes through all these cut scenes of the different styles of dancing and the different sort of subcultures that like go to these shows. And so like, you know, yeah, it's all the different styles of moshing, like picking up change or like making a pizza and stuff like that. It's all very tongue in cheek.
Yeah, yeah.
There's a very funny bit where it's like New York hardcore style, and then Californians doing the New York hardcore style.
Yeah,
and then they're like falling over, and then it cuts again, and then it's like emos, and there's just like these little guys, like the '90s idea of emo, in like their flannel shirts and their big horn rimmed glasses.
Yeah, yeah,
like,
yeah.
Like,
dude, I love it. And that's
so, yeah, it's like,
and then even from that, if they're being funny, you know who probably
they're funny
because you know because and you can really feel that in the record of just like fun.
Yeah,
man. I mean, Bloodhound Gang might have. they're in Pennsylvania. That's across the road. Sing It All fucking had everyone.
Yeah, yeah, totally. Yeah, I got a quote here from the singer. just talking about, I guess, talking about their sense of humor and talking about the music video. He's like, we might be this super tough band who play this really intense music, but we like to have fun and laugh. We were kind of poking fun at the scene with a lot of affection, which I think comes through on the video as well. It's like, because they're real dudes. Like they're not entering the scene after the fact. They were in high school when they were in the scene. poking fun with a lot of affection because it had gotten so serious and so many bands just weren't allowed to crack a smile.
He talks
about Biohazard, which was a band I covered with Hastings, being so serious. And he's like, yeah, it's cool, but like, I don't know. We just don't do that. Like, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
So he says, we wanted to show the world. Obviously they're on MTV all of a sudden. He's like, we wanted to show the world hardcore, but also let them know that we could have fun too.
Yeah.
No, which I think is so cool.
I think it's a great mission statement.
Yeah. And then he goes on to say, like, because obviously, like, there's always a lot of backlash for bands who sign to majors if they're coming out of a DIY scene, because it's like, for some reason, success is taboo.
100%.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't know. And he goes on to say, he's like, we never believed, like some of the bands in our scene did, that this music should be hidden away from people. We wanted to go out and expose it to as many people from outside of our walls as we could, and we saw nothing wrong with that.
Yeah.
And I love that as well, because he's like, this makes more sense to me than a lot of people who kind of look back. Like a lot of people locally, but also in a lot of interviews I read, like people who have grown up in hardcore and done really important hardcore bands, they kind of grow up and they move on, which is great. But then they look back with this like sense of resentment because it's like, obviously it's another self, it's a younger self. But like my point of view is like, you got so much out of that as a human being.
Yeah.
And you learned so much about yourself and it meant so much to you at the time. You can't just throw it away.
Yeah, all of a sudden. No, yeah, it's
grow with it. Like grow with it. You know what I mean?
100%. I think like I think especially like back then, I mean, you know, mid-90s, you're in a punk scene. It's like, you know, and it's all, I guess the good thing that young artists don't really worry about now is that there is no such thing as selling out. As soon as you make a song, you gotta pop a TikTok up.
Yeah, totally.
And it's like,
it's
like, man, I did this shit independent. It's like, yeah, but you've made 50 TikToks for one song.
Yeah, well, like we were talking about Hottest 100 before, like Doja Cat won the Hottest 100, but didn't she start just by doing YouTubes and TikToks and stuff?
Well,
like
I mean,
that?
Hers was like, her story was, is a bit stranger because she, like kind of saying, like, I guess she got caught in a thing where she was signed in like earlier than you'd think, like probably 2012 or something.
Okay, sure. Yeah.
They tried to make her into a top, like, you know, Kesha-esque pop star, type of area. Didn't quite work out. They had her shelved and then she made Moo and then that blew up. So it was pretty much kind of like, it's like if you were at your job for 4 years and they were paying you to work on other shit. And, you know, she was writing other songs and stuff. And then just one day she was like,
pop this up and then make
the video and then that blew off and then they were like, oh shit, hey, we sign you. Yeah, do you want to do stuff? And then she was like, yeah, I've got all these ideas. And then nailed it from that.
Yeah. But she's kind of cool. I like that she covered Hole for the Triple J like a version. That was pretty cool.
Did she do like a version?
Oh, man, it was Spotify Sessions.
It might have been Spotify Sessions.
Yeah, that's probably it. So that major label thing was like, that was a big deal in the 90s. It doesn't seem like a big deal now, but it was just like everything suddenly changed, like I said, after Nirvana. And he just says here, he's like, everybody told us that if we signed to a major label, our next album's going to sound like Green Day. But in reality, it just let us do what we wanted. And I've got a quote from a review that just says, Scratch the Surface is harsher, speedier, and more inflamed than anything that came before it. Yeah. So like the fact that they went onto this major label, it actually just gave them the resources and the time, I guess, to make the thing that they were always meant to make.
Well,
rather than watering it down, they became what they were meant to be.
No, 100%. Yeah. I mean, that's because I think I said it off air, where it was like, listen to this album and then went back and listened to their debut because like 10 songs each go for like a minute and a half.
Yeah.
But all their songs, and get clobberings on that.
Yeah.
But all their songs, like, it all just sounds like, I didn't even like make sense that they were kids because it sounds just a less refined version of that. But it's the same thing. Like,
yeah, they were doing the same thing.
It doesn't sound like, it's not like those messy like 3 seconds. What's that like? It's a whole different genre, but like, what's that?
You think of grindcore?
No, yeah. Like, you know, like not like Cannibal Corpse, but like, you know, those, one of those bands that, like, you know, the songs called, like, I Fuck.
You think of, like, Anal Cunt?
Yeah, Anal Cunt. That's what I literally, yeah,
they're a grindcore band.
Yeah, that's it. Okay, yeah. I think yeah, it's like,
No, where, that is kind of a different, like, yeah, those bands, like, or at least a band specifically like Anal Cunt, they're kind of, like, separate to the hardcore scene, but they're also kind of separate to the crust-punk scene. There's, like, this other subset of, like, yeah, there's so many weird, like, we could do a family tree if we wanted and look, find out exactly where they sat.
But I mean, look, God bless them. But, like, I mean, kind of, I don't know what you're saying.
Yeah, like, a lot of the other stuff, we kind of addressed this already. But, like, just the fact that I think it was like a very technical thing where, like, they're in the studio, they had time, they had money, and they were just able to focus on this record and make it sound great.
Mm.
Like, the songs are already there. And the other thing I read is, like, in terms of the style of music they were making, it's sort of like, I guess, like, post Youth Crew was the term. And Youth Crew is just, like, really another word for sort of saying, like, more or less New York hardcore from the 80s.
Yeah.
So bands like Youth of Today, and I think that's probably where the name came from. But, like, straight edge, usually very clean cut, short hair, all ages shows, like, very important. But, like, pretty, like, to my ears at least, and I mean, it's not really my style of music, but, like, pretty rudimentary kind of music, kind of simple songs. Whereas this is, like, it's still got the aggression, it's still got the speed, but it's, like, way more interesting, like, just from a guitar playing point of view.
Yeah, no, 100%.
And from a vocal point of view. Because what you were saying before about those punk songs where it's like, bah, 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 that is very...
Yeah, and that's why I like about the vocalist on this, where it's like, and this is what I was saying when we were walking in, where it's like, it felt like this album... And it's how you know it's like a real crucial album because it is that all the lessons kind of refined from the old style of punk.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then kind of introducing new ideas that will get expanded upon by, you know, your Korns.
Your Thursdays.
Your Thursdays.
Yeah.
Your fucking systems. And like, so yeah, it's just, I mean, it's like.
It's just so crazy how like you wouldn't ever put, unless you're going to like fucking Soundwave Festival or whatever, very rarely would you hear the bands Korn and Thursday kind of in the same sentence, but this band is like the missing link between both of them. Yeah.
Well, that's what I really, and that's kind of what I like about this album versus, and why I've been really getting into this new Thursday. Oh, not the new Thursday, the one that came out after 9/11.
That
new Thursday album where he dedicates it all to 9/11. bit late on that one, brother. Oh, and the song.
Was that War All the Time? Was it Full Collapse?
War All the Time. Yeah, the intro.
War All the Time is my. That's my third. That's my Genesis. That's
record. So the song I've been rinsing for the workforce drowning,
dude.
Yeah. So
that is a sick of it all riff. Yeah, that's a sick of it all riff.
And what I love about it is that, and it's like, this is what reminded me about this that whole album.
Yeah.
Was that he, the guy in Thursday, and I don't know any their names, but like the guy in Thursday, like. And you can see where Mike Hem takes his lessons because Thursday produced.
It's
like every, he follows song structure where it's like intro, chorus, verse, he follows it all. But, and the flows are the same and like the, but everything he says is different.
And
that's just like, yeah, it's like, it's a really, and which is like an old school way of doing it, but I think it's like a really cool way of writing songs.
Yeah, totally. You know? Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, definitely. Yeah, I know exactly what you mean. Yeah. I don't want to labor the point too much, but I just do think it's really interesting, like the reach that they had because they talk about like how the major label backing got more opportunities. They're able to reach more people. And he's just sort of talking about doing big festivals in Europe. And they were like one of the first hardcore bands to be on these
big
festival lineups, which I think we have a lot of in Australia. But I think it started more so in Europe because like America to Europe, that was an easy way for bands to tour. They have Vans Warped Tour in America, and then here we've had Big Day Out, we've had Soundwave, all that stuff. But yeah, just like a good little example of it is like, you know, people were there to see the Prodigy and bands like that, and they liked the energy that we brought. So all they know about aggressive music is like the fucking Prodigy,
and then
they see Sick of It All, and they're like, oh, this is the real shit, you know?
Yeah,
like,
yeah, 100%.
Like I love it, and he's saying is like they weren't exactly hardcore fans, but they became Sick of It All fans. And he just says like back then people said it would be the kiss of death for a punk and hardcore band, but it was what gave us our career. And this is Pete Collar, the guitarist. And yeah, that's sort of more about like their reach. But, to talk about the style of music itself, it was interesting to see just how natural it was, because like the drummers in it talking in an interview, Armin Majidi, and he's talking about when they started the band, like when they were teenagers.
Yeah.
And he's like, we were all metalheads. And one day I was walking home, and in those days it was really obvious when two people were into metal or hardcore. It was just the way we looked. And so he's talking about seeing the Collar Brothers, they went to the same high school, and they're just like, oh, you're into metal, I'm into metal, blah, blah, blah. Mm. And so like they like this aggressive music, but then just by virtue of being in New York, they became part of the hardcore scene, because that was like the main source of aggressive music. So it's weird to think of like these influences from when they were kids combined with just the influences of time and place and the culture that they were in. I don't know. I love how it all just, it's like this perfect storm, almost like
100%.
I just find it really, really interesting. Just like the level of chance involved in it. I really want to talk about like the sound and what grabbed me. Cause I've been listening to this band for, I guess 20 years now. But just to wrap up like the research part of it, like the boring shit. 100%. I just like to get an idea of like their legacy and kind of drive that home. So this is just from like a music magazine. You'd be hard pressed to find a hardcore band with a discography as deep as Sick of It All's and one that is as consistent as theirs. And that's kind of like, that's what I mean when I say I could have chosen any record, honestly. Like,
no, you could have.
There's just one of their songs is called, they got a song called America, which I think is off an album, like three albums after this one. And it's still, that's like a classic as well. Another song, I think the first song I ever heard from them was on a compilation, and it was called District, which is off Yours Truly.
Yeah, yeah.
Just two albums after this. And it's just like, God damn, like what the, like it's just, everything's a hit.
I mean, and you know what? From that, I mean, and if you want to talk about legacy stuff, like, I mean, two things. One, after I listened to this album, I was like, yeah, no, I definitely want to check out more of this stuff. Like, this is an interesting band. And then even like going through like songs and titles, I mean, Yours Truly, that's even a fucking, like that's a band now that just started.
Oh, right. Yeah. Like, yeah.
There's like a Triple J, they kind of, I don't know if they specifically got their name from that, but I would assume that had a point. And so it's like, still see their feeling, their things, you know, still being picked up.
They absolutely are. And like, a lot of the reviews kind of talk about their reputation, which I think is really interesting in terms of hardcore, because like so many bands would break up like in the 80s and the early 90s. They do one album, that's it.
Yeah.
And this one album is so important for the style of music and all the bands that came after them. But we're starting to get to a point now in 94 where you're talking about bands that are still, like in Sick of It All's case, still touring today.
Mm.
And they've released albums consistently since, I guess, 89, you know, and they still have this great reputation. Like people are like, no, it's not about whether they sold out or didn't sell out, because sure, they were on major label records. Now they're on a metal label called Century Media, who mainly just release fucking metal bands. But like, no matter where they've been, no matter about the business side of shit, like Sick of It All have this reputation, and they've maintained their reputation just by being like, this is what we're going to do.
Yeah. Just,
we're doing this
and
shit.
And also just keeping it real. And,
keeping it real.
And, I mean, that's all you... Because, you know, I mean, there's a lot of, like, you know, even if you don't have to sell, but sign a major label to sell out. I think, like, you know, I think there's many ways you can sell out.
People, it's weird now. It's weird now to watch bands. And it's not about mainstream versus underground at all, because I do see punk bands doing it. Bands who aren't signed, they have no financial kind of responsibilities, nothing like that. They're literally playing to 50 people. They're like, oh, we got to do something. It could be anything.
Yeah.
We got to make a song that sounds like this. We got to dress like this. We got to do something. And it's like, how about you just enjoy yourself? It's same with comedy, dude.
Dude, I mean, one of the most, like, because I, you know, I get emails all the time from bands, from labels representing. And like one of the things I hate is when in an email pitch, is like, and I can see why they're doing it.
Yeah,
it's exactly how you're supposed to do it. It's like, hey man, can you play my shit? We sound like Ocean Alley mixed with whoever's popping on Triple J.
Yeah,
and then you listen to it, and you know what? I'll give it credit to them. They have absolutely nailed it. Yeah, they sound like Ocean Alley.
But they've done the calculations.
And Ocean Alley sounds like Sticky Fingers, and Sticky Fingers sounds like... It's like, you know, like, guys, you've nailed it.
Yeah.
But are you... And if you are Ocean Alley, like, cool if that's what you do. Like, then, you know, what's creativity? Just bring in another influence. What about Ocean Alley meets rap? I mean, that could be garbage.
Yeah.
Probably would be, but, you know, it's like that thing. Where
no,
it's,
I know what you
it's
mean.
Like, it's
I,
like,
I,
man, don't...
You're trying to be something before you're yourself.
You exactly. Know? Yeah, and, you know, I mean, and like you said, it's in comedy. Like, a lot of people, you can really see it in their eyes.
At an open mic where you're just in front of two people, potentially.
Bro, this...
You're trying to act like someone who's more successful. And it's like, dude, this is the time that you get to act 100% like yourself.
100%. I mean, this is like, like, this is why comedy, you know, and I mean, I kind of did the opposite. Well, I was like, you know, I was working a way that I thought you had to and stuff and open mics. And I found, you know, things that were working, I just kept doing. But like, you know, like now I feel pretty... I feel like the only way to get a good joke now is you have to go out on stage and really fucking be fearless and like go out, do some whatever. And especially
when
there's...
same with music as well.
And also...
Like, but fearlessness.
Yeah. And what the worst thing about like some of these open micers and like come to a new...
Get into it.
No. It's like... And I know exactly why they're doing it, but it's like, you know, it's like obviously they've Googled how to be a comedian and they've read everything you can.
Yeah.
And I did the same thing, I guess, back... Not even, and it's not a long time, but even like 10 years ago now.
Yeah.
You know, I had one Ralphie May video that was like, that's the how, it was like a 3-hour thing. Now it is podcast. Blah, blah. So it's like everyone's found their favorite comedian.
Yep.
And because every comedian now fucking loves to stroke their own dick about how they write jokes.
Yep.
So you just can see how like someone going up there and going, I'm not Mark Norman or I'm fucking Bill, you know, it's just, they're just doing it. And it's like, I miss the days when you walked into an open mic
and there's some psycho in a cow mask playing the guitar on stage.
Or some freak with a fucking kilt and he's got a big 13-inch dildo that he pulls up and he goes,
Brizzy, baby.
Come on! And you know what? Call me nostalgic for good comedy, but that's what it was.
When comedy, well, you could say what you mean. Man, I was at an open mic last night. Holy shit, it was so good. It was like Brisbane vibes open mic. It was like just a front bar in the city, and this guy gets up and he's like, oh yeah, like just like no, and God bless him, he's only just started. This part isn't the dig, but like literally no charisma. He's got his little notes and stuff. He's just like going to do his stuff. And
straight up.
Cool. He's like, yeah, so with the way things are going at the moment, you can't really say anything that you mean anymore. You got to be really careful about what you say. I was like, Yes, dog.
Come on, big boy.
It's been too long since I've heard this.
Yeah.
I love it.
Yeah.
It's so good.
What did he finish up with?
Oh, it was something like, it wasn't even something very good. It was like, it's totally gone. It's something like, oh yeah, I gave this woman a compliment and then she got really angry at me. And like, and then so I'm like, well, that's the last time I visit my sister at work.
You know what's annoying?
What?
Because because
he didn't even say they were a strip club or anything like that. It was just like there was nothing about
He almost revealed it. It's like, I mean, it's such a whatever. It's like I went and saw my sister at work today, and I was like, oh man, you look really great. And she said, oh, whatever. And I'm like, can't say anything to women these days. I mean, that's not much better.
That's not much.
But you know what? Maybe just don't do it. You know what? Why don't you just go? So I looked at my sister like, you fucking frigid.
You're fucking, yeah, well, you don't want to.
So I called my sister a cunt.
Turn off the gala video.
Damn, Melbourne Comedy Festival's a bit weird this year.
Yeah. Just to finish up, I did want to... Sorry, that's such a hard left turn to try and come back to talking about this. But I did want to like to talk about the songs themselves, because I mentioned the song District, which isn't on this album, but I remember that being the first song I heard just on some compilation CD I had. And it was the guy's vocals. It was absolutely Luke Collins, the way he sang, because it was like, oh yeah, he's screaming, but he's not screaming, but he's not singing, but he's not yelling. He just, no one else sounded like him.
Yeah.
And he did influence, like there's a hardcore band called Comeback Kid, and I think you can hear a lot of Luke Collar in the singer of Comeback Kid. But that came years and years later, and I was just like, this guy... And then, but more so than that, it was like, just that bass tone, the bass guitar in this band, Craig Sitari, who used to be in Youth of Today and Agnostic Front, all these other important bands or whatever. But his bass, it was the first time I was like, oh, the bass can be, I guess like the bass can be as important, as aggressive, as much of a part of the song as the guitar. Because it's always the guitar. It's always like the riffs. It's always like, you know,
you know what? I mean, now that you kind of say, because I think my biggest problem with a lot of older punk stuff like kind of stuff around this generation is, and just because of how ears are and how you can hear everything, it kind of sounds tinny because it's all guitar.
Yeah, yeah.
But that's what makes this album sound so big.
The
groove and the bass,
He's such a big part of it. And like the guitarist, like Pete Collar, the guitarist, he's like got such a unique style of
great guitar playing. Yeah, great guitar work.
There's no deficiency in the guitaring, but like for me and like I played bass in bands and stuff, I was just like, this is what a hardcore bass player is meant to sound like. And I was just like just sounds like fucking, it sounds like industrial. I don't know what it is. It sounds like New York. It sounds like like real like urban streets of New York, kind of like just that controlled, I don't know. I can't, there's too many adjectives going on. Yeah, but just like if you listen to a song like Consume or listen to a song like Maladjusted or like I said, District off the other album, it's like you really just get like this weird like frustration that comes. Oh man, I love it so much. But then in comparison to that, then you've got Step Down, the big single, which opens with a like bass by itself, but it's like a melodic progression. And it's like a punk song. It's not a hardcore song necessarily. It's like, you know, and it's just like these guys, they're just so versatile.
Yeah, and I'll tell you what now. Go listen to Turnstile. Those cunts love a fucking bit of bass work.
They love a bit of bass
work. I'm calling
Freaky
out.
Friends is a good bass player, man.
Sick of it all, man. They fucking, they run this town, dude.
They run this town.
Who gonna run this town tonight? Sick of it all. Not Jay-Z. Yeah, no, fuck those guys.
We're gonna get Nat Townsend to play Scratch the Surface in the beer bar that we're about to go to.
Absolutely.
Yeah, that's kind of all I wanted to say about it. Like, I just really do love this band, and they're just sort of like... It's weird to think about because like they are such a example of what hardcore is, but they've also been going for so long that they kind of exist above the clouds a little bit. Like they're headliners on festivals, they're headliners on, you know, international tours like they're doing in Australia now. So it's all, they're not like at a glance, I don't think they're a great like way to look at the scene or the culture, but also like just by virtue of that, they kind of are, because it's like this is what happened in the 90s, and all of a sudden it's not what the major label thought they were going to be. They're not Nirvana.
Yeah.
It's not like everyone knows who Sick of It All are, but they made the most of this opportunity, and now like they've got a full fucking career,
man.
Never stop releasing albums.
Look, that, and you know what, I think at the end of the day, and what I've been really getting into, you know, of like, I think back when I was, you know, when you're a kid and you dream about, you know, being a comedian or a rock star or this and that, you know, you look at the biggest and best and stuff, but now it's like, you know, when you get into, you know, life, and you know, 26 I am now, where I'm like, all right, well,
yeah,
look, I didn't do uni, I had no work experience outside of radio and shit. Like, I kind of have,
all right, brag it up.
No, but you say it's a brag. I don't even look at it as a brag. I'm like looking at it going like, I'm gonna make this fucking thing work.
But it's
kind of like a thing where it's like, you know, I mean, cool, life would be awesome if I, you know, become like a fucking Bill Burr, sell a fucking stadium, but you know, when you get to a thing where it's like, man, you know what? At the end of the day, if you can make a career out of it all, and especially from a band like these guys who, like we've been saying this podcast.
Like you've maintained your integrity, you've maintained your reputation, you haven't like, you do whatever you want to get, like, I don't think people should avoid getting money
at all.
But like, you've never undermined yourself.
No, exactly. And you haven't sold out your own values. I think that's commendable thing. And yeah. And you know, just be rocking out for 30 years.
Just be rock and rolling.
Just be rock and rolling, dude. And brother, that's all it's about at the end of the day. Just fucking couple of boys in the shed strumming a fucking couple of guitars.
Doing a podcast.
And fucking ripping. I mean, this is us jamming.
Putting the Jägermeister neon on the wall.
And you know what? We'll say the brand now. Yeah, we're drinking Bolter's.
Bolter's
Come on.
Sponsor the pod.
Come on. Give us some fucking money, you guys.
I'm glad you liked it, man. I knew you liked a bit of punk. It's interesting. Because, like, I guess Sick of It All wouldn't get played during the day on Triple J, but Amity Affliction do.
Oh, you know what? I mean, I'll tell you one thing right now.
Yeah.
And this is the thing about the Triple J ones. If I dropped a Sick of It All, even if they put out a new song and I dropped it, they'd allow, like, no one's going to stop and walk in and go, what the fuck?
Yeah.
I guarantee I'll get, like, a couple of fucking texts going, fuck Sick of It All.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Nice. Yeah,
but, I mean, but also, I mean, that's also a nice thing. I think, like, I think. And this is, I mean, I had a little bit of a, one thing about my job actually made a lot of sense over the weekend with Hottest 100, because I was doing the thing and I did the countdown and I went and saw my mate Amy, who was doing the countdown. She was hosting an event at a pub.
Yeah.
And there was like young people. There was like 19, 20 year olds. So it wasn't a lot of people, but they were all young people.
Yeah, cool.
And they were all listening to the countdown, which I thought was great.
Yeah, cool.
But Amy was like, afterwards, she was like, oh, it's so funny, that group of girls over there, anytime that you and Luce were on, they were just like, oh my God, shut the fuck up, play the music. Which I totally got.
Like, thanks for telling me, Amy.
Yeah, yeah, I'm like, thank you so much, that's all. I thought I had a great gig, but fuck it. One thing that was I was like, oh, this is kind of why radio is important, and why lunch for me, it's like, this radio is good because you have those personalities and stuff. Yep. And I think like more for... what Triple J does well is not really the daytime stuff, more the specialty, where it's like a young person who's interested in shit like this.
I used to always listen to Short Fast Loud.
Short Fast Loud. I mean, man,
I was stoked when Lockie got the racket. I know it's been years and years now, but I remember when it happened.
Yeah.
We were still in Brisbane. He might've been in Melbourne. I'm not going to talk on behalf of Lockie, but like everyone was like, Yeah. That fucking rules. Because he's just like such a little nerd on these message boards and he just knows everything. He just cares about bands. He cares about finding new bands and cares about like the old bands that influence it. Like he's just the perfect personality for it.
Oh, dude. And that's like, and like, look, if you listen to a show during the day or like any radio show for anyone, you know, and it's just like, it is, you know, it's a bit, for me, like, you know, I can't. You know, I have to love everything in a way.
Yeah,
you know,
it's like, oh, it was so good.
Yeah, yeah. And like, oh, but it's like, you know, I'll specifically when it's something I love, I'll talk about
that
it.
That wasn't MCR, but it was still pretty good.
It was still, But then you got like Josh who would spend like a 5-minute talk break talking about a riff.
Yeah.
From a song that came out in 1987. You're like, yeah, fuck.
Yeah.
You know? Yeah, it's shit like that.
Yeah. No, I would never get hired by Triple J, so I got to do this instead.
Absolutely. Well, hit the Patreon. You got a Patreon up yet?
No, I got to do it, man. It's just like, with what time, I always say. Yeah, I do want to start a Patreon to anyone listening. But in the meantime, complaints department is open. I'm always very aware that maybe I'm missing facts. I'm missing important details. I have been told in the past, like, for example, suicidal tendencies were a gang at the time. I'm sorry I got that wrong.
Damn.
But email or send a DM on Instagram. But the email address for the pod is just deadramonespodcast@gmail.com. So send in anything. If you want me to cover a certain album or cover a certain band or whatever, like,
and if you
let me know.
And if you have a problem with me, Dave Woodhead, you can call me on 1-800-KISS-MY-ASSHOLE. Bitch.
If people don't follow you already and they want to, what's your Instagram,
man,
stuff?
Dave A. Woodhead Instagram. That's probably where I'm most active.
Yeah.
Dave Instagram's A. Woodhead Twitter. Sorry, not Twitter. I do have
X,
a Twitter.
X.
I do have an X in Twitter. I don't really use it. I've got to delete it. So TikTok.
TikTok.
Do some more stuff there. TikTok, Dave A. Woodhead.
Fuck yeah. And
the show is Black and White.
Black and White. Do not forget. Go
comedy.
See.
Melbourne Comedy Festival, Adelaide Fringe.
Melbourne.
Comedy. Man, these two light beers already got me in a way, dude. I'll be fucked up tonight.
Go see Dave's show. I've got a show. I'm only doing Sydney this year, at least at the moment. It's called 13 Jokes. Follow me, ryan.d.sim. Follow the podcast, Dead Ramones, on Instagram. And if you're interested in a live local comedy, come to Rat Club on a Monday night.
Sydney. Best comedy room in Sydney.
It's very fun. That's it's been very fun.
It's fun. It's a fun time, especially when it's packed.
Yeah, yeah. It's a good one, guys. Come down, check it out. All right, man. Any last words before I murder you? Fucking...
Dude. Yeah, can you get me back? Next episode I want to do with this, because I know you're doing year by year.
Yeah, yeah.
So when you get up to Breaking Benjamin.
were they your boys?
Oh, well, look.
You were too cool for Nickelback, so you had to listen to Breaking Benjamin.
Dude, honestly.
I'm actually pretty old.
Honestly, I could do a whole WWE vs. SmackDown soundtrack special for you.
You know what we should do? We should do that on a Patreon with Jesus.
Dude,
we should do that.
Honestly, because
wrestling,
you know what, I don't want to burn this because we will talk about this, but I got to tell you a story about the night that Hastings and I watched one Breaking Benjamin live song and then watched a full, what's his band called? Fuck.
Three Days Grace. Yeah.
Three Days Grace, up. Animal I've Become. We watched the whole concert from
Jesus them. Jesus Christ.
Yeah.
It's weeping with emotion.
They were fantastic. One of the best live acts in the country.
What a note to leave it on. That's perfect. That is perfect. I love it. Thanks so much for coming on, Dad.
No worries, really, really appreciate it, dude. All good.
Thanks for listening.